to Rise and Climb with Anna. I'm just someone who really, really, really loves stories. And I'm going to do the best I can to become as good as I can to share stories that help me not only overcome, but hopefully inspire you to overcome the hardest challenges life throws at you.
All right, honey, because we're talking about Eli's birth tonight, Eliezer's birth, I want to know if you want more kids or not.
I don't know. In some aspects I do, in other aspects I'm okay with how many we have now. So, And I think you feel the same way based on our conversations, but...
Before even having kids, I know why people have zero. I mean, I've never thought... I don't get why people don't want four kids. I've always thought, this is why people stop. Even after one, this is why somebody stops. Mm-hmm. After two, I can see why people stop. After three, I definitely understand why people stop. But it never felt right to stop for us. But I can see why. So, yeah, I would agree. We're undecided.
Yeah.
I think we're going to have one more, though, but...
I think that's a definite possibility, but if we do, like I said, I want it to be soon.
Oh, gosh.
Within 18 months.
Oh, my Lord. Have the baby within 18 months?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Okay.
Well, I don't want to wait that long. Let's get this over with.
I might start subscribing to the idea that men can have babies and let you have this one.
That's what that ultimately for me is more the reason why I don't know if we're going to have five, because I want to have five right away and have all of our kids taken care of so that we can start working through some stages. And I want all of our kids to be pretty close in age. Because in 18 months from now, Benny would be 7.
Okay, I can have a baby within 18 months. I've done it now 2 times. First time was 15 months apart. Second time, they're 19 months apart. I can do that. It's the idea of having Lydia, Eliezer, and a baby. Because Lydia's only 19 months now. Eliezer's... not even a mom. And then new baby.
Another 19 months. On top of 3.5.
And then I could get pregnant with twins. That's what happened to my mom and grandma.
And twins again.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Anyways. So stay tuned, listeners. We shall see. You just have to keep his hands off me.
You didn't even do an introduction this time.
Well, I'll do an introduction. I can add an introduction.
Okay.
Yeah. Do you want to, how about I don't do an introduction and you introduce this, honey? Oh my gosh. All right, I will add an introduction. Okay, we are talking about baby Eliezer Michael's birth. While it's fresh in our mind, I don't really want to right now, but I want to do it while it's fresh in our mind with Michael. As a gift to our Eliezer so that he can remember all the memories he never wants to remember. Or he can...
All the memories he doesn't have?
Yeah. I mean, mainly so that he... As a gift, if he ever wants to know. Here you go.
There you go.
Okay, so where do you think we should start, honey?
Well, we can start at the beginning. When did you conceive?
Okay, full disclosure, I don't remember conceiving Eliezer. Some people do.
But let's track back.
Okay, oh, we're going all the way back.
So September?
September, because 9 months. He's counting on his fingers.
So it would be not September, it would be August.
Okay, so we...
So, you know, summertime, okay. The heat, summer loving happens so fast.
Okay, the leading up to it, we decided that once Lydia was 9 months old, we would stop preventing. And we got pregnant when she was 10 months old, because they're 19 months apart. So, however it works, because you're technically pregnant for 10 months or something, they say, I don't know. But for whatever reason, I think I went through one cycle where I didn't get pregnant, and I was amazed. And then I got pregnant the next cycle. And we knew right away. And I knew that it was Eliezer. Mm-hmm. And so I guess maybe let's talk about the name, because we had the name picked out. So first of all, you picked out Eliezer a while back.
Yes, at the same, shortly after Benaya.
Yeah. And you're like, if we have another boy.
I want to name him Eliezer.
Eliezer. And why?
Well, we were reading through King David's Mighty Men. And there was only a couple names that in that list that you can even speak.
Obi-Nehan. Easily. Yeah, yes.
So I said I wanted, if I have two boys, I wanted them named after David's Mighty Men. And mm-hmm. Eliezer was one of the other names. He happened to be one of the three best warriors in King David's army.
Second best warrior, yep.
Renowned for standing against an army of the Philistines by himself after everyone else fled.
Yep, in a barley field.
Near a barley field. He didn't, so that okay. one, see, Shama or whatever is the third of that group, and he was had something with the field too, but.
Okay.
Anyways, long story short. So everyone else fled. He stayed to fight.
With King David. Yes.
In the, I don't know where, I read both accounts. In the
both accounts say with King David.
Well, we'll have to read it again.
Oh my gosh.
So, long story short, they returned after, so
about the hand thing.
So the reason I say all that, and the reason I hesitated is sometimes a passage will say with King David in the terms of like, he was part of, with David, King David's army. So that's why I'm hesitating to say that, because it says they returned after him, not them, to only collect the Philistines, basically spoils of war, like all their armor.
Yes.
So that's why I hesitate to, you know, you got to be careful with your interpretations just because it says something, you know.
So maybe by himself, but then tell about the sword.
And so the other thing was he had fought so hard and long. Mm-hmm. With a sword that they couldn't remove the sword from his hand, which is actually a condition where, like, your tendons lock up. So, long story short, what I thought was neat about his particular story was that this idea of standing alone even when everyone else flees.
Mm-hmm.
And the importance or the need of us today, myself included, even though I fail at this sometimes, of standing alone even when everyone thinks you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And fighting for what's right, or fighting to protect something that's important, even when you're the only one doing it, and trusting in God for help. So I thought it was a neat story, a neat message, and something that I pray Eliezer can model.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the main reason. And then his name means, as Anna just looked up to confirm,
God is my help.
Yes.
Yes. And what is really cool about that was, I think I just took for granted that renaming him Eliezer, and I took for granted that I knew the story. But when it got difficult towards the end, when I was facing being overdue, and it wasn't just that I was facing being overdue, it was that I was constantly contracting and going, thinking labor was happening. That's what was hard. I really think I, quote unquote, could have handled just being overdue if I didn't have any false labor. But the false labor is just like my Chinese torture. So anyways, towards the end of the pregnancy, when I was really creeping into being overdue, I went back and I read about the story of Eliezer, and it really helped calm and help me calm, because it's like we're naming our son this because we love the property, we love what he stood for in his story. But guess what that meant? That meant that he was in a really hard, dark, lonely place of struggling and fighting and battle and death. And trust me, I don't think my situation was as bad as him. But it just was like, if you want that kind of victory, you have to go through the valley, the dark spot. And God was his help, and it was lonely for him. Mm-hmm. And that really helped me because, I mean, I didn't feel alone. I felt very supported by people, but it was kind of that funny when you're in a situation and then you hear all these stories where nobody, it feels like nobody can actually relate, because almost everybody I knew in my circle at this time had scheduled C-sections or had their kid early. And so it felt a little alone, or people, you know, people sometimes say stuff and it's just like, you don't get it, which was good. It was okay that they didn't get it, because it really helped me be like, well, Eliezer felt alone, and like people didn't get it because people ditched the pain, ditched the battle. And here we're choosing a home birth when we could have a hospital birth with no pain, you know, if the epidural works and all that. And so it felt like we're going into battle. So even just the imagery of Eliezer, you know, holding the sword and raising his hand in the fight, even just that visual really helped me pre-labor, as I would do like meditation on being relaxed and pushing the baby out. And then when the baby came out, or like when I was in labor, I dug into this story too. So the name really became very profound towards the end. Mm-hmm. So God is my help. And then how I knew we were having a boy before we even found out we were having a boy. One, there was two things. There was a time that I put on a podcast, and it was about discipleship. And so I figured it would be about somebody in the New Testament and Jesus. No, she referenced Eliezer.
Probably Aaron's son, because Eliezer was also Aaron's son, the
priest. But either way, it was like, what was really profound about that was I was not searching out for Eliezer. You know how many podcasts I've heard of Eliezer as the main character? And it was at a very specific time that I was thinking about our next baby. So that was a really, like, whoa time. And then we have Adventures in Odyssey CDs. And so Adventures in Odyssey is a kids' Bible program. Amazing, well-written. Like, I want to listen to them. I want to stay in the car and listen to them type thing. And I think I rented the series from the library. So we had the CDs downloaded to our CD library in our van. And the story about Lazarus would come up. But what we didn't know, and we've since learned, is that Eliezer is a variant of Lazarus.
Well, Lazarus is really the Greek way of saying
Eliezer. So in this story, or in the Adventures in Odyssey, they kept using
Eliezer
instead of Lazarus. But it was the story of Lazarus, and it just was... It was just one of those things that, again, because of what I was thinking about and praying about at the time, it was like one of those weird Eliezer references that I've never had in my life, probably never have again type of thing. And then I was like, we're having Eliezer, I know it. And then we found out, and it was very anticlimactic.
Yeah, because Alicia, who we do love,
You get in front of me.
Alicia, who we do love, decided to throw eggs at us as the reveal. And I'm like, this is the weirdest reveal I've ever been to. What? She was pelting us, or having my brother pelt me with eggs.
And me with the baby. No. So,
and I think I caught it.
Yeah, you caught
it.
And then crushed it. The egg was supposed to crack on us. A prego to ego. Yeah, it was very creative and good, but the level that you actually have to chuck at somebody to get it is painful.
Especially because the rest were hard-boiled eggs. Yeah, getting pelted with hard-boiled eggs.
So we were pelted with blue and pink eggs, and then the one of them that was blue cracked. And so that's how it was revealed to
us. Yeah.
That we...
I'm sure there's a video of it online somewhere, so...
Oh, yeah, I can link it. All that to say, we found that's how it was confirmed. So we did the genetics test that the blood work said boy, and then Alicia found out and prepared this race thing for us. Again, there's a video. Mm-hmm. And so that's how it was revealed. But I was like, yeah, I knew that. I totally so. I'm 4 for 4 for just knowing. 100%. Because God gives me the name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Michael, I mean, you don't necessarily name it after yourself. We're telling my dad we named after him. No. I mean, we can. But you just kind of liked
it. I think it sounded better together than anything else we're talking about it. Eliezer Michael versus the other names we kind of were throwing around. It just didn't flow as well as that.
It just kind of was like, of course. And I like that it is your name, even if it's not quote-unquote named after you. So we knew we were having Eliezer Michael.
The meaning of Michael's a good name.
I would say this pregnancy, I struggled with fear that something would happen. And I ended up sharing it with the midwives. And they said, you know what? It's actually really common in our culture that women start to get fearful or anxious, thinking, when's the ball going to drop? Something bad has to happen. And she said, you know what's interesting about that? The Amish community, and they have 12 kids, they don't get that. And so that was kind of helpful to realize that it was just something that didn't have to be there. It's
because the Anna's beliefs or belief was that Eliezer was going to be coming early, and she was worried that she wasn't going to make it to 37 weeks, I think, or 38 weeks.
Yeah. Well, I had contractions at like 24 weeks. And then he was a week late. Yeah. So oh, gosh. Jokes on me.
In the end, it was kind of funny, but.
Really funny. So actually, it was cool because I did tell my friend, it was like, I just have this fear that something's wrong and all that. And there was no facts behind it. It was just a feeling. And what is completely tricky about that for moms is, there's a lot to be said about a mom's intuition. Even the fact that I know the names and stuff, that's pretty wild. And that's my intuition, right? So it's like, okay, is this wisdom or is this fear? And I don't know. Nobody can tell me. We don't know. But ultimately, I told a friend and she prayed. And then I really just said, you know what? I think it's a spirit of fear. And I prayed against the spirit of fear. And that did help. But when I feel like the more labors you get, the more Braxton or prodromal, which means false labor, basically, you have real contractions, but they don't lead to birth.
Labor.
Going into active labor. And they can come and go. I really had those starting at like 36 weeks. So in order to have a home birth, you have to make it to 37 weeks. So I was even nervous at one point that I wouldn't make it to 37 weeks. Then I make it to 37 weeks. I'm like, all right, the baby can come. 4 weeks later. And I know that birth dates can be wrong. And I know that a normal birth can be within 42 weeks. But when you've been having contractions for a long time and you think you're going to go early, for like any time over that gets to be mentally hard. But it wasn't physically hard for the most part. Because I, even though I had contractions, I wasn't physically feeling pain. Or some people feel like the baby's going to drop out, the solo. I didn't really have that. I had more of this unknown and all that. So what do you have to add to that, honey? Leading up. I want to hear.
Hey, I tell you what, it won't be as long.
Thank you. He's rubbing my back now. Like that's going to help me.
No, you obviously have more of an experience of that than me.
Yeah.
Because I'm not carrying
a child. No, and you would be sleeping stomach. And I would be up with contractions.
Yes, so it's a lot more difficult than you, and I get that. One thing during the pregnancy, because as you were saying, the fear aspect of it, and it brings to mind, okay, possibilities, this, that, you know, you can obviously go through the rabbit trail. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it was a sermon I heard or just a kid's book I read to Benny. It might have been that dragon book. And they talked a lot about perfect love casting out fear. Mm-hmm. And that was meaningful in the sense, well, obviously it's biblical. But it provided a different way of looking at it, which mm-hmm. was, I think, beneficial for me during this whole time where you're not knowing, and you're having the fear about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And really what it was for me, and now I'm going to go long.
No kidding. Jeez.
What it was for me was the idea that, how you say sometimes, worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you do you trust God, worst case scenario, what do you have to fear?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's a just, it's a good reality check. If you truly trust God, what do you have to fear? Mm-hmm. And you should have the confidence of, no matter what, mm-hmm. everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. Even if I die, even if everything goes wrong, what do I have to fear? Mm-hmm. God loves the baby more than I love the mm-hmm. baby. So what am I afraid of?
Yeah.
You know, and that was just helpful. And kudos to the book for highlighting it in a unique way, just a little different way, you know, in a fiction way, which brings out kind of a different way of experiencing what fear looks like. And so,
and knowing you and us together, it doesn't mean that we don't have safe spots to feel feelings and process it. But the point of surrender typically comes when you accept that perfect love casting out fear in this situation, and that, okay, so we do have a NICU baby. It's not ideal, but we'll figure it out. So we lose the baby. It's not ideal, but we figure it out, mm-hmm. you know, and learn and grow, and because of what the Bible talks about with hardships and what to expect. But yeah, so I think it was good. I think I went through all those ranges of motions of, okay, if this is my intuition and this, what's it mean? But ultimately it felt good surrendering that and just walking in peace and not constantly thinking something bad is going to happen. It was really good to be able to release that.
Yeah. And you really did change after that, and your mindset changed.
Yeah.
I remember when you really processed through that. So
yeah. Good. Yeah. So I think it was good. And then, so I would say I knew the baby was going to come, but I joked. It was like, mm-hmm. oh, this baby's never coming, you know? And I was like, well, I know the baby has to come out one way or another. It's just when and how long will it take and all that. But I would say once I had two different surrender points, because I had two kind of like different rock bottom moments. One, you text me. It was like a Tuesday, I think, before I was due.
Yeah.
And you're like, how are you? And I don't know. I was like, not good.
Yeah, and that was stemming from work items.
Yeah, your work
and
stuff.
And it was actually after you were due, the Tuesday after you were due.
Okay.
So you were already feeling the pressure because we didn't have the baby. And there was a lot of circumstances at work because I had a replacement scheduled for the week
you were due. I was supposed to have a baby.
The week you were due. Yep. And then it just so happened that we didn't have the baby. So I was home for 2 days thinking that the baby might come because you were feeling things.
Yeah.
And then I went back to work and then found out it was Wednesday. Because I went back to work Wednesday, found out that my replacement was on vacation the next week, so I had nobody to cover me at work. So, and you were just processing from my end.
Yeah.
What I sensed was she's just processing the hurt of everything was planned, and now the mm-hmm. baby's late, and now everything's mm-hmm. wrong. So I thought it was understandable for sure. I didn't think it was crazy or weird that you were feeling depressed or sad about that.
Yeah, and it definitely, you know, and I think you're, well, what was tricky about that was the midwife had come to the house that Friday and checked me. And she's like, I'll probably see you back this weekend. Like, all of us thought we were having a baby.
Yeah.
I mean, even the midwife did. So it makes me feel less. Or, well, I shouldn't say that. I feel like midwives are very cautious to say this is it. But cervix conditions were favorable for me having a baby. I was more efface. I had gone up a centimeter, and I know that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but the contractions that I was feeling were pre-labor, and then...
And it's your fourth.
It's my fourth, so I think I know what... I was like, oh, in the past, this would have led to a baby. So I'm... And then I'd wake up, no baby. I have to text the people who are on ready watch. No baby. All that. Okay. So, yes, I hit a low point on Wednesday. And then, ultimately, I got to the point where I decided this baby is...
You bounced back pretty quick.
Yeah, I did. I think I did. I
was impressed, actually, with how you handled it. You were sad for a day, and then you were... Okay. Just embraced it. So.
And then it got to the point where I was like, I'm just going to focus on the babies I have right in front of me and all that. I would say I was the most anxious about your work stuff. That and work stuff in childcare. Because also then what happened was who was going to be able to come and get Lydia told me her dad was having surgery. And so like by the time I was 4 or 5 days overdue, she couldn't help me anymore. And so it's just, it felt like another, again, it kind of felt like that Eliezer moment of just loneliness of, you know, what do we do? I feel alone, even though I knew I wasn't, right? Okay. So anyways, all that to say, Mother's Day comes. Am I going to have a Mother's Day baby? Nope. I didn't need a Mother's Day baby, but, you know, was he waiting for that? At that point,
you would have been happy.
Yeah, yeah. You know, give me a gift. And it really was good because I wasn't expecting anything. Like, maybe we'll go to Mother's Day, maybe we won't. But then, so Mother's Day comes and goes, and no baby. And I wake up on Monday, the 15th, and I'm like, this baby ain't coming today. I'm going to go to the Y. I'm going to do my normal workout. To lift weights, and we're just gonna do everything normal. We're gonna pretend that I'm not 41 in one day pregnant. And I would say I definitely walked to the car and I felt pain, but I was more annoyed. Oh, I do want to share this moment. Okay, it was on a night that I was having contractions. It was one of my low nights, and that I was processing, that like the triggered from your work stuff. It was a night. And I started having contractions again. And I was like, I'm not going to say the word, but I was like, contractions, you can shut the up. Like, I was so pissed. I was like, you stupid effing contractions. I hate you. I resent you. I'm kind of feeling tempted to resent this baby now, even though I know that's completely irrational. I really, like, I was just so angry. And then what came with that was because I wanted to have a home birth. I was like, watch, this is the night that I go into labor because I'm angry, but I don't feel like I could push this baby out because I'm just so angry. I'm so done and all that. Well, I didn't have the baby, but I decided that if I went to labor, I actually almost woke Michael up and said, we're going to the hospital and I'm getting an epidural. We're just going to have this baby. So, but I didn't have any much good child care, and you would have had to go to work the next day and didn't have anything scheduled. So that's what kept me back from actually thinking it was real. So anyways.
The Lord works in mysterious ways.
Yes. All that to say is once I got through that point, I told you, Michael, I was like, it's really cool because I can actually, I feel empowered now. I actually can visualize pushing this baby out, which was really good because I had gotten away from it because I was just getting kind of despaired. So I got to a place where I could actually really visualize the baby out. So this is Monday, the 15th. I'm supposed to have a midwife appointment at 10 o'clock. I could go there to the office, but she called me up. She's like, are we coming to your house and breaking your water? And not because they're forcing me to, but because I had made a joke. I was like, if I have to see you next week, just come to my house and you can break my water. But I go, no, I said that joking. Like, Michael needs to be home because last time they broke my water, I had a baby within 45 minutes. And I've only ever had my water broken during active labor. And so it's like, no. But she's like, well, I can come to the house anyways. So she came to the house and she checked and she's like, you're 4.5. Well, you just went to 5 centimeters from checking me. And you're about 70% effaced. And I was like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Tell it to the judge. Like, I don't care. It doesn't mean anything. She's like, well, should we do the membrane sweep? And I was like, yeah, well, you're up there. Just let's see if it helps. And she's like, okay, well, you have to know that I'm like 3 for 3. All the past few people I've done this to, they had a baby within 12 hours. I was like, well, good for them. Doesn't mean anything for me. And later on, she would tell me, when she came back after the baby was born, she would tell me that she really did think, she's like, oh, yeah, no. I think she, because she told the other midwife, yeah, she's probably in labor. And then when she left, she's like, you should call because in your situation, you might think it's not really happening and you could just have the baby before we're here. And I'm thinking, that'd be a great problem to have. The baby comes that quick. So she said, okay, but if you want to keep this going, like keep going with the membrane sweep, you know, and stuff and kind of these labor signs, you should go for a brisk walk and take a hot bath because that can release oxytocin and some nipple stimulation, which would increase oxytocin. Okay. So I got the house ready, moved around a lot intentionally, kind of like the brisk walk idea, took a bath, decided to have Michael come home at noon, because after that I was like, I'm kind of feeling things. And do you want to add anything, honey?
No.
No? Okay. So I was like, Michael better button stuff up at work. I'm kind of feeling stuff, like I'm uncomfortable. And I started to be like, oof, I think I am. And then I got childcare lined up and felt really good about that. So I was like, you know what? Let's just have the midwife come at 3, break my water. We're going to have a baby. Today is the day, I guess. I didn't think it was, but it is. What's really cool is I had a friend praying for me during this process. And she said whenever she went to pray, what would come up is like praying for knowledge for us and just decision making. And I really feel the culmination of that answered prayer was at that moment. Everything just seemed clear and really at peace with it all. And thinking that, and everything really lined up. And so starting though at like 1 o'clock, I thought, I think I need to time these contractions. I didn't think I needed to because the midwife was coming. So it wasn't like, when do we call the midwife to tell her to come? It was more so, these might be pretty close together. Maybe the midwife needs to actually come earlier. So I laid down and I rested at 1 o'clock and I started needing to breathe through the contractions. So I would say labor kind of started at that 10:30 mark. Then light labor where we're still talking, like you came home from work and you came home from work around noon by 12:30. I was still talking like pretty normal. Could you tell?
You were talking normal until 3 o'clock.
So she broke my water, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would be like, I would stop. So I say at least 3 hours of pretty light labor after that water breaking. And then 1 o'clock, more medium, where I close my eyes, is like breathing through like that.
She didn't
break your water until
3.
No. At 1 o'clock. Okay. So 1 o'clock, and then she broke my water at 3:54. So she came, she was running late, and I thought, oh, I don't know if this is good, she's running late, but it was fine. And she got there, say 3:20, and she checked, say at 3:30, and she's like, you're 100% effaced, you're 6 centimeters, and the water sac is right there, which was a huge answered prayer, because I didn't want to break the water with it being right there. Without it being right there and truly an active labor. So I said, well, let's break this sucker. Let's get the show on the road. But she's like, well, let's wait because we need my assistant here. And my godmother was still coming. So at 3:54, we broke the water. And I said, how long? And I was still talking and totally normal. And it was just kind of a weird, like, okay, I'm in labor and my water's already been broke. Wow, I'm already pretty far along for me. And the water sac, she like had to like rip it open. Pretty tough. But then she broke that. And then I went through a few contractions that were okay, but then labor really did start, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
And then she thought, I had her guess, because last time she was right when I had the baby, she guessed I would have a baby in an hour, which was wild to me. Because none of my other labors were like that. There's a lot more progression, a lot more hard active labor. So I just didn't think I believed it. And so I really struggled with believing that the baby was actually coming when it wasn't. I wouldn't have to work 12 plus hours for it. Mm-hmm. So I'll include the video that has a lot of it. But honey, what do you want to add in here at this time? So labor's going. We labor a lot in the room, but what was different and what was the same as the other pregnancies for you?
There was just faster in the sense of the needing me around to hold my hand, stuff like that. It was just faster.
Yeah.
And then you used the ball a lot more.
Yeah, like I leaned on the ball and rolled. I didn't.
Mm-hmm. And you didn't need me to hold your hand or anything till you really got intense, when you got up to like 8 centimeters.
Yeah. Kind of a little more, so and the last half
when
hour.
When you're actually starting to want to push and she's mm-hmm. telling you not to push, you mm-hmm. need to breathe through the contractions, so.
Yeah. So that's what I would say that's the biggest, besides the time that I actually hard labor, was I didn't use you as much as the other times. And again, there's a video that I'll include the link on. So don't really want to hash out all those details because I think it's better told in the video anyways. But basically, the most important part of all this is I had her check, and I think that's when the next time she checked me, I was 8 centimeters. And then she's like, "You're doing great. You'll have a baby soon. Keep breathing." And then it felt long. But to her, it was only a couple of minutes.
It was only a couple.
I was like, "Can you check me again?" And I knew, she was not like, "Yeah." She's like, literally paused. She didn't say anything. "I can." I knew it wasn't rational. But the reason I wanted her to check was because I wanted to see if what I was doing was actually helping it along. Okay, that's all I wanted to know. Is it rational? No. But I think she's like, "Why don't we do a few more contractions or something?" Mm-hmm. And so she did, and she's like, "You're still at 8. Like, yes. Okay. So then at some point, I love laboring in the tub, and I thought, "Oh, I don't want to miss my labor in the tub." And I also, what are you laughing at?
Nothing.
Me in my tub?
Yeah.
And then I also was kind of like, I could actually kind of picture myself having a water birth, but she said, because we didn't get the bathtub, because I've never wanted to actually push in the tub. So the last home birth, we didn't get a big tub. So, and we didn't do it this time. So if you have it in a regular bathtub, you have to be like laying on your back, because the baby has to be either fully out or of the water or fully in. And so I thought, I'll try. So at this point, when I got into the tub, no, before I got into the tub, everybody like thought that I was going to push the baby out, but I didn't.
Yeah, right before you went into the tub, we all thought you were going to push the baby out because you were progressing.
Yeah.
And having a lot of, heavy or difficult contractions. And everyone was under that impression, but then things kind of stalled.
Yeah.
And you said, "I want to go into the tub."
I think if I would have stayed, I probably would have had the baby a half hour quicker. But yeah. I get me to that tub, got to the tub, and this is where then I wanted to start to push, but she's like, "Anna, you can't push yet. The baby's still stuck on a cervical lip, I think.
Yes.
And you need to breathe." And that was just so hard for me to trust the process, because this whole time, the process has not been very faithful to me. So that's what I really struggled with, and just really tapped into faith. And then really realize that, like, faith is what we can't see. And I wanted to know. I wanted assurance. And you just couldn't have it. So I actually really realized how weak my faith was. And, like, what true faith really takes. And, I mean, somebody could say I had it. But it really felt... It was good to see, okay, God, wow, I really need your help in this area of just trusting the process in the fight, in the battle, because that's what Eliezer had to do. So it was cool of this awareness of, wow, I'm not living up to this Eliezer potential, but how cool that I can tap into his story to help me lean into it. So that's what was going on in my mind and through the breathing process. Then eventually the heart rate was dropping. So she said, "Anna, we got to get out of the tub." It was like kind of a stern. Mm-hmm. I was like, "Okay, we're getting out of the tub." So we get out of the tub, get back in the room. And how long do you think it was before baby came?
Probably like 5 minutes or 7 minutes. I don't know.
You think so?
It's hard because it feels long.
I know.
But it also feels short. So I would say within 10 minutes for sure.
So I get back into the position that I've actually visualized having the baby in. Not because I was like, oh, I visualized this, so I had to, but it felt the most comfortable. And then she goes, baby likes this position a lot better because the heart rate went back up.
Yeah.
And she's like, Anna, you're doing great. You're going to have a baby soon. And I just remember thinking, no, I'm not. And why do people do this? Yes. I think I said that.
You did say that.
But this part I was really struggling. Like, no. I mean, it's transition. So it's like the hardest part where women literally feel like they're going to die. That's what they say. When you know you're feeling like you're going to die, that's when you know it's almost time. So how were you doing, honey, during all this?
Just praying for you. I mean, what can I do?
Can you get closer to the mic? That's what you can do. No, but you said, like, you shared that, like, you cried a little.
Oh, when you're in pain, yeah.
Yeah.
I can connect to you in that. I can feel your pain, so to speak.
Yeah, because you're empathetic. But I don't remember you saying that about the other ones.
I don't know. It's a good question. Good point. I don't think I was as empathetic in the other ones. You know, it's more duty focused.
Sure, but maybe because I wasn't using you as much for the physical, I felt like you were there more spiritual. Like I remember you praying over me, like out loud, and other times I had you pray for me. It was because I asked you, but this time you just kind of
I could tell you were struggling more.
Yeah, I think it was just intense because it was 2 hours.
You had to get rid of your music early on, too, so.
Gosh. Okay. Anyways, so no, you were there. You were definitely great and more of a spiritual sense support, I feel, than physical compared to the other ones. So anyways, I'm there and all of a sudden I can't believe that the baby might be here, but I'm starting to feel the burn and the ring of fire. And so eventually I push him out. And then his head is just out for a little bit.
Head was out for just a minute.
A minute, yep. And then I was trying to wait. And she's like, you know, Anna, do you have another contraction? Wait for a contraction. And I was honestly like, I don't even know when I'm having a contraction now. It's like part of me just...
It all just hurts.
Yes, it all hurts with so much pressure and all that. And then, but I mean, really 2, 3, 4 pushes and the baby was completely out. I really didn't have to push too long. So I would say pushing in all was 5 minutes max. Five, 10 minutes because I feel like the final descent was truly just 5, 10 minutes. But it's hard to tell. So at any rate, it really did go quickly once we were back in the room and then he came out. And honestly, I was still just in shock. And I think of a lot of pictures, I see these moms like crying or like pure joy. I think I just have relief. On my face, relief and like shock of honestly, even when he was out, I just thought, I can't believe he's out. All of a sudden he's just out, especially because just that morning at 10 o'clock, I didn't think I was having a baby. It came quick. It was just such a different experience, such a different labor. Probably my quickest labor, but I don't even feel like I could say it was my easiest labor. I still feel like Cora was my easiest labor. Even though I labored longer, I just feel like the hardest part of Cora still wasn't as hard as this. And it really had to come down to just, I was really struggling to trust my body because I thought this is my fourth. I know what to expect. I'm not going to be fooled this time. And then I thought what can I trust? I don't think I can trust. So I think that's where the faith aspect comes in, is just really when you don't know what you can trust is really focusing on who the Lord is and resting in Him and trusting the process. And so that's, I think, what makes this a more difficult pregnancy was that whole aspect. And I don't even know if I'm putting it into words perfectly, but that's what I would say. Do you have anything you want to add?
No.
So he came out and then he wasn't breathing right away at first, but eventually
he had some stuff in his lungs and he pooped all over you, like, everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, nothing like the meconium where in his lungs after he came out, or while he was coming out, he pooped everywhere. Yeah. And there's poop everywhere.
Because there was no poop anywhere near his face.
Nope.
It all came out after he exited.
Yeah. And then somebody's like, he pooped all over you. I was like, he did? And then, like, you can see poop just everywhere. I was just totally oblivious. But eventually, and he was fine. And bright-eyed, so bright-eyed, latched and, like, didn't unlatch for hours. And then the whole birth team was gone within 50 minutes. And it was just us and the midwife was there until...
She hung out for two hours to go through some things.
Yep, and to make sure I peed and stuff like that and to check my uterus. And then she left. And then the rest is history.
By 8 o'clock, we were home alone.
On our own. Yeah, so it was like she broke my water at 3:54. Oh, and I had Eliezer Michael at 5:55 on 5:15:23. So this is really cool. That unique, special, fun number was really cool. Because all the weight, I was like, you know what? That's pretty cool. I can remember that. So, yeah.
And all odds.
All of our kids have been born on odd birthdays. So that's the story of Eliezer Michael. Do you have anything else that you want to add, honey?
No, I think he's been super enjoyable. I think it's been so cute to see the kids. Love him well.
Oh, my gosh.
Lydia just melts my heart when she tries to have baby sit on her lap with her hand gestures. It's so adorable. Yeah, I mean, he's such a cutie and a great little man. I'm so thankful for him.
He is. He is such a gem. And the kids love him. And Lydia, like, I'm chopped liver. Lydia is, I walk into the room with the baby, and she just lifts up her hand and squeezes her hands together, like, give me that baby. Like, thank you for being the surrogate. I got it from here, mama. That's her attitude. So, we've been really happy. Totally worth the wait. What a journey, learning. And will there be a fifth? Lord only knows. Well, maybe there's a fifth and a sixth.
Tell you in 9 months.
No. Get out of here. All right, you want to sign off, Michael?
Thank you for listening.
You know. Okay.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please give Rise and Climb a 5-star review or share it with someone you think who would equally enjoy it. If you also feel so led, you can support this podcast with either a one-time donation or monthly subscription to help pay for sound and editing equipment that helps produce more kingdom-driven and relevant-to-the-times content. God bless.